book of Romans, but singing last night, boy, we're getting close to wrapping it up. I think we have about six or seven more sermons if the schedule goes as planned left, and we'll be through chapter 15 and 16. But today we're in chapter 14. We're going to be looking at the first nine verses. You see on the outline I've got the message titled, Let's Be Tolerant. Tolerant is not one of my favorite words. I think it's been a favorite word of a lot of people that I tend to disagree with and tend to be intolerant of. So I don't like it. So I've thought of some alternative sermon titles. One is, let's show deference. I like that word, deference. You defer to someone else. I like it because I never learned that word till I was probably 35 years old. So I need to practice using it, you know. So let's show deference. Another one is, let's chill out. Might be a little classier title that we could give it. But let's read our text and see what we mean by these things. Romans chapter 14, verses 1 to 9. Verse 1 says this, receive one who is weak in the faith, but not to disputes over doubtful things. For one believes he may eat all things, but he who is weak eats only vegetables. Let not him who eats despise him who does not eat, and let not him who does not eat judge him who eats, for God has received him. Who are you to judge another's servant? To his own master he stands or falls. Indeed, he will be made to stand, for God is able to make him stand. One person esteems one day above another, another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. He who observes the day observes it to the Lord, and he who does not observe the day, to the Lord he does not observe it. He who eats, eats to the Lord, for he gives God thanks. And he who does not eat, to the Lord he does not eat, and give God thanks. For none of us lives to himself, and no one dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord. And if we die, we die to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ died and rose and lived again, that he might be Lord of both the dead and the living. We'll stop there for this morning, and next week we take up the same subject, but in a little more depth. You see on your outline, I've got 4 points. The first one is this. I've got this worded poorly, I want to say intentionally, but I couldn't think of a better way to say what I wanted to say in a short sentence. The sentence is this, we should be tolerant, not because, but when things are doubtful. Now I want to restate that as two different sentences, and I want you to think about what's different about these two sentences. Here's one sentence. We should be tolerant because some things are doubtful. We should be tolerant because some things are doubtful. The second sentence that I want you to listen to is this, that we should be tolerant when things are doubtful. Now, what's the difference between those two statements? First statement was this, we should be tolerant because some things are doubtful. That implies that we should be tolerant as a whole. We should be tolerant as a whole because there are some things in life that there's doubt about. But the tolerance that we are encouraged covers a broader base than those doubtful things. We should be tolerant because some things are doubtful. The second statement is this: we should be tolerant when things are doubtful. Now, I like that sentence better because it narrows the scope of my tolerance. I don't have to be as tolerant about some things as others. In fact, it implies that there may be some things I don't have to be tolerant about at all. I'm only tolerant when things are doubtful. So I like that statement, but I want to let us see both of the statements so we can kind of hone in on the point I want to make. Well, what do we mean by doubtful? Being doubtful. Have you ever been doubtful about something? Always remember the definition I heard of a strongly opinionated person. It went something like this. A person who is strongly opinionated, forgot how the first part of it went. He is, knows what he believes. Here it is. Strongly opinionated person. He is not always right, but he's never in doubt. All right, now that's a good way to put that. Person who has strong opinions. They may not always be right, but they sure think they are. There's no doubt about what they believe is right or wrong. Doubts. I have doubted about several things, have doubts, even now, about certain things that I don't understand. Some things it is hard for me to be dogmatic about. And it seems like the older I get, the more things are in that basket. Some things are black. Some things are white. We could name a host of things. Stealing is wrong. There's no doubt about it. Having sexual relationships outside of marriage is wrong. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's wrong. That's black and white. Some things are essential. Some things are non-negotiable. But other things, there's a little more doubt about. If something, when we talk about the scripture this morning, and this could apply biblically wise in a lot of cases, but if something doesn't involve our salvation, then there are some things that don't involve our salvation that it's hard to be dogmatic about. And we're going to look at two things. Paul lists two examples in our text this morning. They're very familiar to us, especially one of them. And they may not apply to us. They may not be the issues of our day that we have debates about. In my lifetime, I could name you, if I had time to think for 5 or 10 minutes, I could name you, I bet, 25 or 30 things, maybe more, that there was disagreements about among Christians. Some of those disagreements, some people held to as this is sinful. Some others would say, or not use such a strong word, they might say it's just not wise, you know, it's just stupid to do this or do that or whatever. Some people might even go so far as to say about certain things that if you do these things, or you have to do these things, or if you you have to do these things to go to heaven, or if you do these things, you will not go to heaven. And there's a big list. There's a big list in that has touched my life, either through church or people that I knew or whatever. I could name you a bunch. Let me name you a few. Playing cards. Okay, I've been in environments where people thought it was wrong to play cards. Rook, hearts, poker, whatever. Spades. That's wrong to use playing cards. I've been in environments where it's wrong to use dice, because they're used to gamble. I've been in situations where it's wrong for men to have certain length of hair. Hair's too long, that's not right. If the women's hair is too short, that's not right. If the men wear dresses, that's not right. If the women wear pants, that's not right. If you have drums in the church, that's not right. If you have drums outside the church, that's not right. Okay, just no drums. A host of other things. Dancing, that's a good one. Dancing, if you dance, that's not right. If you buy lottery tickets, it's not right. If you go to casinos, it's not right. All of these things. Barry, you got one? Playing pool at the pool hall? Okay. All right, hey, here's one. Wire rim glasses. Okay. Back in the early 70s, there were some Christians that frowned on wire rim glasses. Why was that? Because John Lennon had wire rim glasses. Okay, you're trying to look like the rebellious generation. Okay? It could go on and on and on. All right? The degree to which some people held to some of these things, King James Bible. If you don't use the King James, it's wrong. All right? It could go on and on. Some people hold to these things more tightly than other people do. Okay? But in most of the things I've just named, you'd be hard-pressed to go to the Scripture and find verses to make your case without doubt. Having a piano in church, or having music in church. The Church of Christ would frown upon us with that. All right, so all kinds of things. Paul names two. Let's see the two that he names. The first one is this. Should we eat meat and vegetables or only vegetables? Now, I've got a list of questions on these two points here that we're going to kind of go through and answer the questions from the text. Some of them are clearly stated. Some of them are implied. So here's the first question. Let's read verse 1 and 2. Receive one who is weak in the faith, but not to disputes over doubtful things. For one believes, one person believes, he may eat all things. But he who is weak eats only vegetables. Now the question that I've got here for us is this. Who is the weak person? The veggie eater only. Person who only eats vegetables, I'm not calling him weak. Paul calls him weak. He who is weak eats only vegetables. Okay, so Paul labels him with that label, doesn't he? Okay. Second question. Is the weak person the one who is, and I've got in quotes, wrong? Is it implied one way or the other in this verse whether he's wrong or whether he is the one who needs to change his view? Okay, I think so. I think that it's implied that the person who is eating the veggies or who is labeled as weak is the person who is in the wrong. And the reason is because he's called weak. The word weak there, and this may be the next question, the word weak there implies that he's missing something. He's missing something that would give him strength. And it's not meat. It's something up here. It's some knowledge that he's missing that would, if he could grasp hold of this, would move him from being this weak person to a strong person. He's, perhaps a good word would be, immature. Notice what Paul says in verse 1. Receive one who is weak in the faith. What's it better to be, weak in the faith or strong in the faith? So this weak person is lacking something. And one evidence of this lack, Paul is implying, is that he thinks he should only eat vegetables. Everybody with me? Okay. Is Paul taking sides? And again, I want to kind of put this in quotes. I think so. Why? How do we know Paul's taking sides? Again, because he calls him weak. Paul views him as being weak in the faith. Can we imply that this is Paul's view? That Paul takes this view? I don't think so. I don't think we can imply, or I think we can imply the opposite, that Paul does not hold to this view that we're to eat only vegetables, because he uses that term as someone who is weak. Okay, the next question down there, what does it mean to be weak in this context? What does he mean to be weak in this context? We've kind of answered the question. First one, he's weak in the faith. Spiritually, he is weak. We might say he is immature. He is young in the faith. We might say, I think that this is not necessarily implied, but I think it would fit in a lot of situations, that his conscience is misguided. Or his conscience is misinformed about something. That can happen. It does happen in so many instances where a person is brought up in a certain environment and they are taught and their conscience is trained to think that certain things are wrong. And you don't just get over that one morning. So, what does tolerance look like in this situation? Paul says first to receive them. To receive them. To welcome them into your fellowship, into your life as a brother. To not despise them. To not look down upon them. To not think you are a better Christian than they are. Do not think that you're a stronger Christian than they are. Do not be condescending toward this person. Well, what can we conclude about the view or Paul's admonitions of eating that makes this tolerable? How do we know then that we should be tolerant of this person? Okay? It's because of what Paul is saying. All right? Now, if this person, and there are other passages, John may get into this next week, but if this person is saying, if you eat meat, you're going to hell. You cannot be a Christian. You cannot be redeemed if you eat meat. If you eat meat, you will lose your salvation right then. If that had been this person's view, that's one thing. Paul wouldn't be talking about this in this manner, I don't think. But it's not that way. It's just a matter of one person thinks he should eat only vegetables. His conscience, he'd violate his conscience if he ate meat. And in that way, Paul is saying, be tolerant. Be tolerant. He's encouraging the strong, even though he never uses that label, he's encouraging the other Christians to just let it go. Just let it go. Notice what he says. We're going to go down to the last part of verse 6. He says, he who eats, eats to the Lord. For he gives God thanks. Now he who eats is the person who eats meat and vegetables. Paul says that person who eats meat and vegetables eats to the Lord. Now, what does that mean? He eats to the Lord and he gives God thanks. He goes on and he says, and he who does not eat to the Lord, again those three words, to the Lord he does not eat and he gives God thanks. So what's Paul saying? I think he's saying that either side, either scenario, either person, their life is committed, their heart is committed to honoring God. They do this because they are convinced that it's pleasing to God. And they give God thanks for all that He is, for all that He has given to them. The person who only eats vegetables loves God. The person who eats meat and vegetables loves God. The person who eats the meat wants to please God. The person who only eats vegetables wants to please God. And they have a grateful heart and spirit toward God, both of them. So that's one example. Paul goes into that in depth in the following verses, which we'll look at it in other books in the New Testament as well. Before we get to the second example, we're going to look at verse 4. Because verse 4 has to do with the eating, and it also has to do with the second example we're going to talk about. Verse 4 says this, "Who are you to judge another man's servant?" All right, he says, chill out. Show deference, be tolerant of this person, whichever side of the fence you're on. And he tells you why, because who are you to judge, pass judgment on another man's servant? Who are you to tell someone else what they're to be doing in this situation? And he uses the example, another man's servant. If I go into Walmart, and I see a guy stocking the shelf, and I tell him, I say, you know, you don't need to put those green beans up there on the top shelf. They need to be down here on this shelf. Move that stuff down here. What's he going to say? He's going to look at me like, what? You know, look for my blue vest and see, you know, what kind of position you hold here. He's going to recognize I have no business telling him what to do. And if his boss were to come along, his boss probably to some extent would be highly offended that a customer would be trying to do his job for him. That's part of what Paul is saying. He says, who are you to tell this person how he's to serve God? God is his master. God is his maker. God can handle it. God is not going to lose him. God is going to keep him. God is able, he says in verse 4, to make him stand. He's not going to stumble and fall and ruin his life just because you are not there to tell him how to live. God can take care of him. Then he goes to the second example. The second example, what we just said about who are you to talk to another man's servant, applies to the second example as well, just stated prior to it. Let's look at the second example. And it is this. Should we view one day as more sacred than the others, or are all days the same? He says in verse 5, one person esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. So here we see this example. In this example, from our text, who is the weak person? No answer. That's good. He doesn't say, does he? Paul doesn't say the one who esteems every day alike is the weak. He doesn't say the one who esteems one day above another is weak. He just doesn't say. He just makes the point, makes the statement, one person esteems one day above another, another person esteems every day alike. He doesn't tell us who the weak person is. Now, Paul wrote this to the church at Rome. And I doubt when the church at Rome read this, that they could say, oh yeah, but you remember in Colossians what Paul said. They didn't have Colossians, I don't imagine. We ought to be able to gain some truth from this text by itself. We don't have to know who the weak person is to know what Paul is teaching. Now, probably most of us know who Paul would think was the weak person, not because of what this says, but because of what we know from Colossians, or Galatians, or I think it's Colossians. All right? But in this verse, in this context, Paul does not identify the weak person. We don't know. Is Paul taking sides here? No. Doesn't appear to be. The only side he's taking is don't despise this person. Don't lord something over them. What is Paul's view? From this text, we can't tell. You can read the book of Colossians and you can tell, but not from these verses. So what's going on here? One person esteems one day above another, another man esteems every day the same. How do people and how do Christians tend to look at those verses? There are three common explanations of how we are to view days. All right? Three common explanations. I've got a fourth one that I want to throw out at you. Now, the fourth one is one that I tend to hold to. Now, the fact that I've got a fourth one and the rest of the church only looks at three is a good indication I might be wrong. Okay? But I might be the weak brother. Really, really, really weak brother. But I want us just to talk about this. The first view is this, that there is a day that we should esteem above all other days of the week, and that day is the seventh day, the Sabbath. All right? The word Sabbath does not mean seven. I thought that all my life, just about, until I was grown. Sabbath does not mean seven. Sabbath means rest. And there are those groups, the Jewish people, Seventh-day Adventist, other groups, that their view of this is that, yes, there is a day that we should esteem above other days. It is the seventh day. It is Saturday. And we should keep that seventh day, that Sabbath day, just like they God instructed us to keep it in the Old Testament. That's one view. A second view is that in the Christian era, or after Christ came, that day was changed from Saturday to Sunday. And that now the Sabbath is not the seventh day, but the first day. But everything else is the same. Keep all the rules and regulations regarding the Sabbath, but you just keep it in relation to Sunday rather than Saturday. That's the second view. The third view is that we should set aside Sunday as the day in which to worship and to rest. We should use Sunday as that day because, not because it's a breaking the Ten Commandments, not because it is sinful not to, but because of the example that we see in the New Testament about when the early church met and worshiped. On the first day of the week, they did such and such. And it is said that that came to be called the Lord's Day. Now that view is by far the majority opinion, but I should add, all the rules and regulations regarding the Sabbath are not valid. They are gone. They were only a shadow of things to come and not the thing itself, which was Christ. And I might add to that that the thing that I like about that view is this, that at least in some circles it's explained this way, and I like this analogy. But when God created the earth, He worked 6 days, and on the seventh day, He rested. And the idea is that that is in type, is a picture of the man who is working for his salvation, and he is laboring, and he cannot rest. He cannot enter into that rest until he has finished his work, till he has enough merit and earned his salvation. But the flip side of that is when Christ came, when Christ died for our sins, now the picture is different. We rest on the first day of the week because we are not trying to earn our salvation. We're not trying to work our way into heaven. We rest on the first day and do our work, our Christian labor, after that rest. And I like the looks of that. I'm not sure that the Bible explicitly teaches that analogy, but I see where people can get the analogy. But I want to suggest to you a fourth view. And this fourth view may be the third one, but maybe not quite. And that is this. And I want to say something. I want to say my statement using two words. One word is, I believe. The other word is, I suspect. Okay, those two words suggest a difference in strength of my convictions. All right, I may be wrong about both of them. That's why you need to tolerate me. Okay? I believe that there is no preference that God gives us of one day pleasing Him more than another, to worship Him. Some of you may disagree with that. I don't believe God is more pleased if we worship on Sunday than if we were to worship on Thursday. I think these verses and the verses in Colossians teach against that idea. I think that we are free to worship whichever day we want. Or every day. All right? But I don't think that the Bible teaches we should hold one day, in this case Sunday, being more sacred than another. Now, having said that, I grew up being taught that it was not that way. And to this day, when I see a business, just last week or so, I became familiar with a certain business, not in Cleveland County, not in Heber Springs, but when I see a business that could open on Sunday and make some money, but they don't, they stay closed on Sunday, I like that. I respect that. Because it tells me, and I may be totally wrong, it tells me that they have a respect for God that we are fast losing in our culture. However, I don't think that they would be wrong if they're a Seventh-day Adventist. I don't think, just because of the day, that they would be wrong in opening on Sunday and closing on Saturday. Okay, now there are other reasons there are issues there why they're doing it. But, so I don't believe that we should have to prefer one day over another. I don't believe the Bible teaches that. I suspect that we ought to have some priority giving someday to God. I suspect that when God told the Israelite people in the law to give the seventh day to rest, it's more than just a ceremonial thing. I suspect that my body needs not to work 7 days a week. I suspect that it is pleasing to God if I make it a point, make it a priority to stop and take some time to reflect on Him. Schedule some time to reflect upon Him and to give to Him worship and to set aside my job and all these other things. I suspect that's healthy for me. I suspect that's healthy for you. And I suspect that you're like me. You have to make it a point to do that, or you will gradually let it all go away. It'll all be smothered out by the things of this world. Now, it's easy for us to do that on Sunday because of the culture of our lives for the last 100 or 200 years or 1,000 years. I come to church on Sunday. If you were here on Thursday, I'd come on Thursday. But I do not feel it's a sin for us to meet on Thursday rather than Sunday. That may be the third view. I don't know. I think it's a little different. But it's that. The fourth point is, let me back up. I'll go through this question. What criteria does Paul suggest for us to use in answering this question? The question is this: one man esteems every day alike. One man esteems one day as better than the other days, is more sacred, is more holy than the other days. What does Paul say about how to look at that situation? He says, let every man be convinced in his own mind. Let every man be convinced in his own mind. I can stand here and tell you what I think is right. I can stand here and tell you what I think the Bible teaches about this subject. But you are not obligated to accept my view about that or anything else. As a matter of fact, if you are quick to just accept what someone says as the gospel, you'll be just as quick to let it go. You need to be convinced in your own mind. And Paul is encouraging here people to think. To think. The things that I hold and grasp the tightest are the things that I have taken years to think through. I'm not as likely easily to let them go. To let them go easily.
So what does this suggest we should handle one another? How should we look at one another? We need to give people room to breathe. Not back them in a corner and badger them about whatever the issue might be. If every time somebody sees you coming, they know, hey, we're fixing to talk about so-and-so. Have you changed your mind on this? Do you still believe this? If they know they're going to hear that every time they see you coming, you need to change your topics of conversation. You need to talk about something else. You don't need to back somebody in a corner and make them uncomfortable talking to you every time you come around. Give them room to breathe. Give them time to chew their cud, to think things over. He says the same about the day, this person, as he did about the person eating. He says, he that observes the day observes it to the Lord. And he that observes not the day, to the Lord he observes it not. Both people are trying to please God. Both Christians are trying to love God, trying to do what is right, trying to serve Him. Let it go. Relax. Point number four. These verses, 7 through 9, seem so simple, and yet they are so profound. He says in verse 7, for none of us lives to himself, and no one dies to himself. And what Paul is saying is there is nobody whose life doesn't affect somebody else. You are not so insignificant in this world that your life does not matter to somebody. When you die, it matters. When you live, it matters. He says in verse 8, for if we live, we live, here's these three words again, to the Lord. And if we die, we die, hear the three words again, to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we belong to God. We are the Lord's. He says that is the reason. To accomplish that, to this end, with that in view, to make sure that that takes place, Christ died and rose and lived again so that he might be Lord, whether you are alive or dead, he might be your Lord. What is it? In these verses, 7 to 9, Paul changes the way he speaks. You might not have noticed this just reading through this. And I'm not a grammar student, so somebody, an expert in grammar, so if I'm using some grammatical terms wrong, feel free to raise your hand and tell me. But up until this point, I think Paul has been speaking, I think it's called a third person. This man, that man, this man, that man. But in verse 7, he starts talking in, I think maybe called the second person, we. He starts putting himself in that group. For whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. He begins to put himself with them. I want to ask you this question. What is it that we have in common? It may not be playing cards. Some of us may think it's wrong to play spades. Somebody else may play every night. It may be this or that. It may be whatever issue it may be. Those things we may not have in common. But there is something that I think that almost everyone in this room has in common. And that's a desire to please God. It is a love for God. It's an earnest and a sincere desire that we want to please and to love and to follow God. Let me tell you an account that this is a true story. In the early 1900s, late 1800s, early 1900s, the means to develop oil, to extract oil from wells in the ground was being developed, and to such an extent it became a lot more profitable to do so. And lots of oil in Saudi Arabia. But about that same time, one of the Arabic kings or rulers or whatever was successful, and those people just fought one another all the time. And one of these men was successful in uniting all of these warring tribes in the early 1900s and establishing a unified front. About that time, a lot of American companies went to Saudi Arabia because they had the technology to drill for oil. It's going to be profitable for the Americans. It's going to be profitable for the Saudi Arabians. And they weren't there long until a group of these Americans went to the king and asked him for permission to open some Christian churches. The early 1900s, the Muslims weren't any more favorable toward Christianity than they are now. They didn't like it. It was infidels, et cetera, et cetera. They asked him for permission. They had to do that, to openly have Christian churches. He said, let me think about it. He probably wanted to think about it because they're fixing to line his pocket with millions and millions of dollars. Well, a week later, another group of Americans went to the king and asked for permission to have alcohol in that country and in their base, et cetera, et cetera. Alcohol is forbidden in the Islam religion, the Muslim religion. The king didn't wait. He asked them this question. If I give you a choice between the churches or the alcohol, which one do you want? They had a powwow. I don't know if they came back a week later or 5 minutes later or whatever, but they came back. They thought about it, came back with the answer. They said this: we'll take the alcohol. The king said, if you had asked for the church, I would have given you both. But because you asked for the alcohol, you can have neither. Now, it is sad that a Muslim man can rebuke supposedly a Christian nation by recognizing this, that if it is your faith that is all important to you, you can handle these other things. You will be responsible toward with the other things. If it's the church you want, if it's your faith that is all important to you, then I can trust you with the alcohol. Now, that's not off the subject. If you and I have this in common, that we want to please God, I want to please God. Mike wants to please God. Elaine McBee wants to please God. If that is what we in this room have in common, then we ought to be able to forget these silly things. And I don't mean to call everything silly. I don't want to mean to call whether or not we should hold one day as I don't need to call it silly. But these things that we get so distracted with, we ought to be able to lay them aside and embrace one another for what we have in common and run with it. Let's pray. God, help us to love you. And God, let our love for you be seen in that we love one another. God, would you work in our hearts and our lives and let us not be so threatened by someone who may disagree with us. Let us know the difference between right and wrong. Let us know the difference between what is essential to undermining our salvation and what things are not so essential. God, help us to hold one another, to encourage one another, to pray with one another, to laugh, to be joyful with one another. Amen.